The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC. Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'll be with my friends. I'm just trying to make you a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate, to teach. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. After big wins, stocks can be very vulnerable. The bigger the win, the greater the vulnerability. And that's what we saw today, which is a tough session for the winners, but not so for the losers. Yep, on a day where the Dow dipped 9 points, S&P advanced 0.1%, the Nasdaq gained 0.32%, it's astonishing how the great stocks at this very moment mostly got pummeled. While the subpar performers of the last year finally had their day in the sun.
Bye, bye, bye.
It's uncanny how the former winners are just falling. I mean, like, Royal Caribbean's been a real horse. The cruise line has outshined all of its competitors, rallying from below 80 last October to $138 yesterday. But today it was down 5 points. When I looked it up, all I saw was an unfortunate incident where a 20-year-old man jumped overboard on April 6th, and a 66-year-old man with dementia is missing off a Royal Caribbean excursion in Mexico. As sad as those incidents are, they're the kind of headlines that are inevitable in the cruise line business. I think people are just looking for an excuse to ring the register on what's become a very strong stock. Meanwhile, among the biggest winners today are some major long-term losers. Moderna rallied more than 6%. This is a $111 stock, but that was $158 a year ago. And it's plummeted from its COVID high of $497 in August of 2021. Moderna's got a vaccine that might work against head and neck cancer, and analysts pointed out today, and that's great. But it's still only in very early testing, not something I'd pin my hopes on. It's their day to do well, though. People can never resist Moderna all the way down. Next loser, how about Cramer all-time fave, NVIDIA, down 18 points and at one point down $40, in large part because of worries about competition, specifically from Intel, which put out a release today talking about a new chip, the Gaudi 3, they claim is vastly superior to NVIDIA's H100 superchips. When I read the release first, I gulped until I read the claims that Intel made about its processor, the Gaudi 2, back in 2022. Which also slagged NVIDIA's chip as a poor man's Intel. And the Gaudi 2 didn't make any waves at all. I know that if I weren't pretty well versed with NVIDIA, I might have been tempted to sell back then in 2022 as the Gaudi announcement made it sound like Intel would own the market that had been previously dominated by NVIDIA because their chip was so much better. The Intel release at the time said the Gaudi 2 had, quote, twice the training throughput of the NVIDIA A100, end quote. But if you sold NVIDIA that day, how'd you do? You would have gotten $175 for your stock. 175. Well, now it's at 853. Glad I helped. Now, it's entirely possible the Gaudi 3 is superior than the NVIDIA H100 in some categories, but the H100 is not what they'll be competing against. By that time that Intel's superchip goes out, NVIDIA will be shipping the much faster, much, much faster Blackwell, which was unveiled at their recent GTC conference. Plus, what made me want to stick with NVIDIA back then? Simple. It's not just the chip, it's the software, it's the ecosystem, it's the platform, it's the leadership. Consider it like this. Let's say you have a running back that could run a 4.2 in the NFL Combine, but in the real game, it might not cut it at all. On the other hand, a fully loaded NVIDIA running back will have developers writing code for it, a host of already hooked customers, including the mega caps, and the service that's nothing short of unbelievable. You need the blocking and tackling that NVIDIA has, and Intel does not. That's why I think the Gaudi 3 will be as lightly used as the Gaudi 2. And I'd rather buy NVIDIA than sell it here, even as I predicted that the stock would get crushed with a lot of selling in the wake of GTC. The selling's been pronounced, as the new stock's now sunk more than 100 points. That stock's now sunk more than 100 points in just over two weeks. And you know what? If we get a red-hot CPI tomorrow, I think we'll see today's lows again. So I'm not saying buy, buy, buy. NVIDIA's stock may have also suffered from the unveiling of a mildly competitive Google chip, too. But if you recall my interview with CEO Jensen Huang, he said he welcomed development and he would even help his customers develop them. And that includes Google. So I'm not shaken or stirred. But I understand NVIDIA can still fall. But, you know, I say own it, don't trade it. Let's consider another one of today's losers turned big winners, Enphase. Here's a solar company that's just been hammered mercilessly, down from $191 a year ago to $122 today. No news, just the usual dead cat bounce, pushing up nearly 6% today. Then back to the winners turned losers. How about Eli Lilly down $20? Why? The only news is good news. Lilly broke ground for a new $2.5 billion plant in Frankfurt, Germany to make Zepbound, their GLP-1 weight loss drug. Call me a buyer if the dust settles. Next, let's look at another loser term winner for a day. FMC up 6%. I took it, you know, I looked it up, and I see one of the most horrendous shortfalls of the year at the beginning of February when FMC said its first quarter earnings would be 21 to 43 cents. Wall Street was only looking for $1.01. I mean, that is really a shortfall. Calling it a shortfall is actually putting it lightly. That's a long fall. The stock was at 119 last year. It's now at 64. A bottom fisher's delight, but I'm not interested. I'd rather go fishing for flounder. Same goes for Lamb Weston, which bounced more than 3% today. Don't get all excited. This maker of French fries plunged from 101 to 77 yesterday in response to disappointing earnings last Thursday. A rebound back to 80 isn't all that stupendous. Fish and chips. How about two winners turn losers, though? Deckers and Eaton. Down more than 2% and more than 3% respectively. Deckers, which you may know as Uggs or Hoka, have been up 33% year-to-date as of last night's close, while Eaton, the maker of so many important electrical devices in the data center, is still up 30% for the year. The only news I found about Deckers was an incredibly positive read from the Crucial Piper Sandler Teen Survey. More than 6,000 people polled, and Hoka was pretty much the star of the entire survey, with a 280 basis point increase in mind share versus last year. UGG was the number two fashion brand among upper-income female teens. As for Eaton, it's my charitable trust favorite industrial because it's involved in the reindustrialization and reshoring of so many industries, and it dominates the non-tech part of the data center. Finally, one more loser term winner, Cisco, up almost 4%. Why? Because an analyst came out and said, buy the stock because it's underperformed. Prosecution rest. So what's all this action about? Simple. Today I got the tough call from my CFO, happy birthday, Noreen, that we have to pay more taxes than I thought. I'm not alone. Especially because the government's taking surprisingly high this year. What a terrific time to take some profits in winning stocks to pay for the stock's gains. But if you own the losers, you've got no taxes to pay. So no tax-related selling pressure to speak of versus these winners, which have obviously drawn a big amount of selling. Now, we can't say that the losers now will be later to win, as Bob Dylan tells us. I think that's wrong. But the bottom line, the stocks that pulled back today have everything going for them, except that they've already run so much that they've become vulnerable. And today's winners, with the exception of Cisco, I say three words. Sold to you. Devin in New York. Devin.
Booyah, Mr. Kramer.
Well, there you go.
Back to all you do, fresh out of college, and thank you for getting me ready for the real world, Mr. Kramer.
Oh, man, I'm glad. You sound like you're very ready and fired up, and I like that. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. So I just have a question about JPM, and given the growth that they've seen in the past couple of months, and with Jamie Dimon still strong at the helm, will JP Morgan consider continue to see the exceptional growth, or, as Jamie Dimon expects, will inflation and higher rates affect J.P. Morgan's growth negatively?
Well, I have to tell you, I think you said, Devin, you really hit the nail on the head, which is that Jamie may not want to tell as positive a story as we like. He may be too conservative. So let's let the earnings speak for themselves. This company sells at 12 times earnings. That's, quite frankly, ridiculous. I think the numbers will be good. I don't know if the stock will react to it, but if it does come down on good numbers, then it's a buy. Today, it was astonishing how the great stocks of the moment mostly got pummeled while the subpar performers finally had their day in the sun. This won't last forever. On Mad Money Tonight, Elf has more than doubled over the last year, and with the company continuing to dominate the makeup aisle, I'm learning more about what has brought the company to this point with the CEO. Then looking for some small-cap tech stocks with that potential, I've identified a handful that I think could be worth watching. And cybersecurity continues to be one of the most important themes in this market, so I'm going straight to the source with the CEO of CrowdStrike. Stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How worried should we be about this cosmetic space? Last week, Ulta Beauty hit us with some negative commentary, talking about how demand is waning, softer. Well, I suspect they're just dealing with more competition now that Kohl's has gone all in with Sephora store within a store. But what about e.l.f.? e.l.f. Beauty, that's the value-oriented cosmetics play that's long been one of my favorite growth stocks. If you know, we liked it since the teens. Back in February, they reported a stellar quarter, and the stock still has got hit because it had run up dramatically going into earnings, like I talked about at the top of the show. I told you it was a buy. And sure enough, it rebounded from 164 to an all-time high of 221 and changed less than a month later. However, e.l.f. has now pulled back to around 170, and I think that's in part because of this horrific Ulta commentary. So is this another buying opportunity? Is really something wrong with the category, with the company? Let's take a closer look with Tarang Amin. He is the chairman and CEO of e.l.f. Beauty. Hey, Mr. Amin, welcome back to Mad Money.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, first of all, let's start before we get to the Ulta comments. Today was a very important day because the Piper Sandler Teen Survey came out. It's something that has made me and the charitable trust of mine consistent money for a long time. What did they show? Your brand is for younger generations. You continue your dominance. Number one cosmetic brand for the cohort for the fifth survey in a row. 38% of the teens earned your company, named your company as the favorite cosmetics brand. That's up 16 points from the previous period. How are you doing this? This is just, you are not the biggest, you are not the wealthiest, you are certainly not the most well-known. How is this happening?
Well, I think it's a continuation of what's driven our entire strategy. Our value proposition, powerhouse innovation, marketing engine continues to propel our growth. And amongst teens, as you said, 38% mind share. The next highest brand was 9%. So we continue to get stronger. But we're also pulling in other age cohorts. And so I feel really great about the progress and how healthy our business is.
Millennials, Gen X, how are you doing?
We're doing great. We're picking up consumers in millennials, Gen X, Latinx, really across the board. It really reflects the strength we have in delighting and entertaining our community.
All right. Now, when I've met you or your unbelievable team, they always have had a time where the stock does take an air pocket. And there's always people shooting at you. And I think it's just because there's people who've been betting against you forever, as you and I both know. And you have just told me, don't pay any attention. And that has been the right course of action.
No, absolutely. And in fact, if you look in the last quarter, our business continues to perform exceptionally well in Nielsen track channels in the quarter. We just passed L'Oreal Paris for the number two ranking, a 12.8% share, up 300 basis points. And as good as that is, I'm even more encouraged by, if you look at our business at our longest standing national retail customer, Target, where we've been their number one brand for a while, in the last quarter, we accounted for 23% of their entire category sales. So I'm quite bullish on our prospects of continuing to be able to double our share in color cosmetics and perhaps even have a bigger opportunity in skincare with two of the fastest growing brands there and international, which are also growing extremely fast.
Now you're talking about going against Estee Lauder. The fact you're past L'Oreal is amazing. But what I love, I have taken an actual measurement to Target shelf. That's extraordinary. You are nowhere near that amount of shelf space. So you're clearly crushing it, which brings me to Ulta's comments. You and I both know, Dave Kimball's fantastic, okay, just point blank, and I've liked Ulta forever, from when Mary Dillon was there. He did say that the category had softened, and that brought a lot of people down, a lot of your companies down. I wonder whether, given the fact that that Tom Kingsbury's running Kohl's, and he's monster good, LVMH is Sephora, you just mentioned the Target numbers. It's entirely possible that what's happened is things have gotten a little bit tougher for Ulta.
Well, you know, we feel great about our partnership with Ulta. I've long been bullish on the beauty category, and I continue to be so. Dave went out of his way to talk about how e.l.f. is really driving a lot of growth for them in the category. And, you know, we see the same thing at Ulta as we see with other customers. e.l.f. is their most productive brand. It's measured by dollar sales per linear foot. We're the most productive brand at Target, at Walmart, at Ulta, internationally with Superdrug and Boots. So we continue to resonate, and I feel we have a great opportunity to continue to take share.
I want to nail this down. You have seen no softness in your business in this period.
Well, we just finished the quarter,
right,
and a few weeks away from reporting, so I can't talk the specific guidance, but our business has never been stronger, and you can see it in the share gains we continue to have, not only in color cosmetics, but also skincare. We're one of the fastest growing skincare brands in the U.S. right now, and we have tremendous potential, and we're seeing strength really across the board, not only in national retailers, but our digital business last quarter was up over 100%. Our international business was up over 100%, so we continue to execute extremely well. I'm very proud of the team and our ability to continue to gain share.
Excellent. Now, speaking of digital, you have actually experimented with new ways to reach customers, including the Apple Vision Pro, taking advantage of the 3D capabilities. How has that worked? And is it something that is that you think is more than a passing fancy, this Vision Pro?
Well, our approach as a digitally native brand is we're constantly testing and learning. We're one of the first beauty brands on TikTok. We have our own channel on Twitch. We actually have right now the best branded experience on Roblox, over 9 million plays in just a few months. So the Apple Vision Pro is a continuation of we're going to constantly test and learn on new frontiers and delight our community and be having the first beauty shopping app on the Vision Pro. We're learning a ton, and I think it just shows like what we're capable of doing.
Is it producing, or is it just good for, let's say, naming purposes?
Well, I think it's important for us as an innovator to continue to learn, continue to try new things. And so it's part of that. And that's really where we've gotten a lot of our success. We're not dependent on any one platform or any one way of going to market. We really look for ways that continue to delight our community.
Yeah, I'm not asking you to pick on any competitor because that's not your style. But the others have seriously not embraced your digital strategy, your kind of a digital native strategy. Are you ever afraid that they will wake up one day and say, you know what, this guy's in all these different channels, maybe we got to be like him?
Well, I mean, they can try. We have about a 20-year head start on that, and we continue to innovate. So I feel, you know, it's a real area of strength for us. If I look at our elfcosmetics.com business, it's really fueled by the 4.5 million Beauty Squad loyalty members we have, a real rich source of first-party data that makes our marketing better. We're one of the fastest-growing brands on Amazon. I mean, I think we have a really broad digital platform, and we continue to invest in it.
Well, our household uses you almost... almost exclusively after you convinced my wife to try it without her knowing because I switched the brands around. I want to thank Tarek Amin, who's the chairman and CEO of e.l.f. Beauty. Mr. Amin, it's great to see you on the show. As always, thank you for your help.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, man, buddy's back after the break.
Coming up, don't just hang with Fang. Kramer pulls out the sharpest small caps of Silicon Valley next.
You seek the key. But first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Like I keep telling you, I think the second half of this year will be terrific for the small caps, which is why I've spent the past week going through the biggest subsectors in the Russell 2000 to pick potential winners. Tonight, we're talking information technology, IT, which accounts for nearly 14% of the small cap index. Now, small cap tech is a little different than big cap tech. We know tech's been leading us higher since the major bottom in October 2022. But for the most part, we've been led by the mega caps, right? The smaller tech outfits found in the Russell 2000 are more modest operations. Many of them are value stocks with extremely reasonable valuations. Not high fly and momentum plays at all. They fly under the, they really under the radar. So let me give you my five favorite small cap techs in descending order of size. First up is Itron, I-T-R-O-N. Oh, I like this. It's an Internet of Things and intelligence infrastructure play. Their technology is what enables smart meters for both water and electricity. This is a terrific business right now because Uncle Sam's shelling out a fortune to modernize the electric grid and the water systems, right as corporate America is increasingly focused on ensuring it can get enough power in a world where data centers devour electricity like nobody's business. Sure enough, Itron reported a magnificent quarter in late February, just a monster earnings beat, tremendous guidance for both the current quarter and the full year.
Bye.
Then the company held a bullish investor day. It was less than a month ago. Plus, Itron recently announced partnerships with two companies I very much respect, Schneider Electric and GE Vernova, which I'm recommending to everybody. Long story short, they're in the right end markets at the right time. I think this stock of Itron is a buy. I'm going to give it the highest compliment I have. I think it should be a big cap. Next, there's Box, which started as a cloud-based storage service, but has since expanded into all sorts of workplace collaboration software and productivity tools. Box has always marched to the beat of its own drum in the enterprise software space. It came public long before many of their peers. Their growth slowed a long time ago, and then they pivoted to profitability before practically anyone else thought, thanks to challenges from a very smart activist investors at Starboard Value. We like the work that Starboard does. Even when the enterprise software core crashed in 2022, this stock kept growing higher. However, as most of this enterprise software group recovered in 2023, Box pulled back, down nearly 18% last year. Now, the other thing showing is a little life. Box reported a strong quarter in early March, even if guidance was a little light. I think they're just being conservative. Like Itron, Box had an investor day in mid-March where management promised long-term double-digit revenue growth with continued margin expansion. Using to my ears, especially since the stock currently trades at an absurdly low 17 times this year's earnings estimate, this company's not liked that much. One last thing. I wouldn't be all too surprised if Box's co-founder and CEO, Aaron Levy, decides to cash out and sell to the private equity firm at a nice premium. Now, I bet the PE firms are salivating at that chance. They're watching the show high. If that happens, you heard it here first. Even as I think Levy might think he's way too young to ring the register. Hey, you know what? Get a yacht. Have some fun. That's what I do. Not. My third small pick is Belden. Now, this is a 122-year-old company that I've... When Ben Stone and I went over this, I said, you got to have Belden in this thing because they make networking equipment like cables, cords, connectors, server racks, and patching systems. So I thought it may be the most boring company in history. They sell this stuff to data centers, telco carriers, governments, healthcare providers, and industrial companies that want to automate. Right now, Belden's clearly doing well. They're coming off a year of record earnings, and the last few years have been pretty good overall. However, the stock's still coming back from a big breakdown last fall when the company pre-announced a big third quarter shortfall and then followed with dismal guidance for the fourth quarter. Eventually, Belden's fourth quarter organic revenue growth was down 18%. That's bad. But I'm now feeling a bit more sanguine about the situation. Why? First, we already knew that about inventory gluts and networking equipment. How? Because Cisco told us. Second, the comeback's already started as Belden ultimately beat Wall Street's lowered expectations when it reported its fourth quarter results. Down 18%. It's bad. But the analysts were looking for down 23%, so not as bad. On top of that, management gave you a better-than-expected full-year forecast. I say don't let the short-term turbulence scare you away from a quality long-term opportunity. We're going to need tons of networking equipment as companies rapidly build new data centers. Remember Ferguson, what they said last night? I mean, we got to retrofit the old ones already so that they can handle the AI era. I like the whole group, but Belden's so darn cheap at over 15 times this year's earnings, and I would call this de-risked. Next up is my favorite. I like Sanmina, which is an outsourced manufacturer of electronics for a host of different industries. This company reported a very strong quarter in late January. It's so strong, it sent the stock up 28% in a single session, largely because the guidance for the current quarter was truly spectacular. But after Sanmina got full credit for its numbers, the stocks pulled back, which I think gives you that great entry point. Hey, by the way, this thing trades at 11 times this year's earnings estimates. Come on. Sanmina is exactly the kind of overlooked and underappreciated story that should work the best in this environment. It's exactly what we want from the small caps right now. I think the contract manufacturing segment is chronically undervalued, and right now Sanmina is the cheapest in the group. Finally, there's one I have followed for ages called Kulicki and Soffa, which makes the big ticket equipment that's used to manufacture semiconductors and other complex electronics. The company's currently valued at $2.8 billion, but if you think of it solely as a semiconductor capital equipment play, that valuation is ridiculously low because this is among the hottest areas of tech. Think about all the semiconductor manufacturing capacity that we're building out in this country thanks to government subsidies. Hey, by the way, we're not alone in doing that. Similar things are happening all over the world. But because Kulicki and Soffa also has exposure to less exciting end markets, a really unexciting part. It gets a much lower price earnings multiple than, say, ASML or Lam or Applied Materials or KLA. Now, as with others in this space, Kulicki and Soffa is having some leaner years now, but people love these stocks because they see a big upturn coming. I think the true tough quarters are already behind Kulicki, so their sales and earnings can grow steadily going forward. Stock's been more or less trading sideways for the past 3 years now, but that means Kulicki and Soffa is more like a coiled spring. When everything comes together for this company, wow, the stock could make a big move higher. It does have these gigantic moves. Oh, it's, you know, kind of coiled spring, but more importantly, they're contained, and you got to be in it before they happen. I have followed this company forever because their old headquarters is about a half mile from where I grew up. But then they moved to Singapore 14 years ago, which is very far from where I grew up. Actually, 19-hour plane ride, the longest plane ride in the world. Two. Bottom line. There's five more small cap ideas for you, but from the tech sector there, and I think you probably like these more than I think you like the financials. At the very least, I hope this list has expanded your horizons a bit, maybe introduced you to kind of boring, non-sexy tech plays like cables that could work pretty well, bonded electronics. Tune back in tomorrow when I'll give you my last batch of small cap picks from the consumer discretionary space, which I know is going to rock your world. Okay, let's go to Tony in Washington. Tony.
Jimmy, chill. This is
Yeah,
Tony,
I'm chilling,
chill.
Man.
How are you doing today?
I am chilling. I mean, like, yeah. Okay.
Love it. Well, I'm hoping you can help a fellow chiller out with some stock advice.
Sure.
I began building a position in the stock back in February, but before I could fully build it, it reported Q4 earnings and has been skyrocketing ever since. I'm wondering whether I should hang on for the ride or sell and take my profits. What is your take on AppLovin?
Man, that thing is just a monster. I've got to tell you, though, it is still not effectively valued. And I know this sounds crazy because it is up somewhere. I don't want you to buy it here. I don't want you to buy it. I don't want you to buy it. I'm just saying, don't ring the register. Look, maybe I don't know what your basis is. Maybe you want to sell half to be able to lock in some things. But this thing is doing so well after a contained period where it wasn't that people are just beginning to notice it. You were early, my friend Tony in Washington. Congratulations. I want to go to Ted in Florida. Ted.
Hey, booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Ted.
Love the show. Want to talk a little bit about SoFi. Obviously, it had a tough March. People freaked out on the convertible note.
Right, it was the convert.
And hopefully push it more products out there.
Right.
And I think Mr. Noto has been, you know, responsible for the timeshares. So obviously, you know, they made money last quarter. I would say if they do it again and even beat, I think this could be a start of something.
I am with you. I am with you. Now, just so we know, Ted, Citi upgraded it. I thought it was a terrific, I thought it was a great upgrade. I thought the stock would soar, but I think people are very bruised, as you mentioned. And as far as I'm concerned, I am with Noto. Why did he, look, it was so bad, why did he come on? He came on twice now when things look tough, and I think he's always explained the story correctly. I want to be sure that I'm right about Citi. Yeah, they resumed coverage with a buy. That piece was very, very positive, and I am with you. I think this one is still going to win. It did have to redo that convert. Okay, now I got to run. I think the second half of this year will be a terrific time for the small caps. I hope this list has introduced you to the kind of boring tech plays that could actually work. Hey, much more Mad Money, much, much more. Including my exclusive with CrowdStrike, the cyber division of the Department of Homeland Security came out with a report on last summer's Microsoft Exchange hack. Suboptimal. CrowdStrike's George Kurtz is going to be with us. He's got some comments about this. Then Bank of America recommended a copper stock that had a parabolic move ahead of it. But is the call a bit too late, or could this mystery name have run more? Or could it run even further? And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. Back on March 20th, the Cyber Safety Review Board, a government agency within the Department of Homeland Security, released its findings about the big Microsoft Exchange server intrusion last year, and its findings were a total indictment of Microsoft's cybersecurity practices. That's huge because although it's not a major player, a business for them, Microsoft is a major player in the cybersecurity space. Reached out to Microsoft for comment, and Microsoft spokesperson provided the following statement, quote, "We appreciate the work of the CSRB to investigate the impact of well-resourced nation-state threat actors who operate continuously and without meaningful deterrence. As we announced in our Secure Future Initiative, recent events have demonstrated a need to adopt a new culture of engineering security in our networks. While no organization is immune to cyber attack from well-resourced adversaries, we have mobilized our engineering teams to identify and mitigate legacy infrastructure, improve processes, and enforce security benchmarks. Our security engineers continue to harden all our systems against attack and implement even more robust sensors and logs to help us detect and repel the cyber armies of our adversaries. We will also review the final report for additional recommendations," end quote. But this is not the first time they've been criticized. George Kurtz, the CEO of CrowdStrike, one of our favorite cybersecurity players, has been willing to speak about cybersecurity inadequacies. Let's check back in with CrowdStrike's co-founder, president, and CEO, George Kurtz, to shed more light on the subject. Mr. Kurtz, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, great to be here.
All right, George, before we get to some of these issues involving what I regard as being a cyber safety review board incident that's unbecoming, Janet Yellen just went over to China, and I watched her be interviewed, and I was wondering whether you think that as soon as she comes back, we will have something like we have with Gina Raimondo, which the Chinese will immediately be acting, untoward versus to our country and even to maybe her department.
Well, those sort of activities probably took place long before she actually got there, which is a big part of the Chinese playbook. And this is what happened in this particular case, trying to understand U.S. officials, what they're thinking, what they're going to talk about, what their policies are before they actually get to China. And it's happened before she got there. It's going to happen afterwards. And obviously, that's why cybersecurity and safety is top of mind.
Okay, well, I was very concerned about this cyber safety review board about a Microsoft breach because they say, among other things, that Microsoft's decision not to correct in a timely manner its inaccurate public statements about this incident, including a corporate statement that Microsoft believed in it had determined the likely root cause of the intrusion when, in fact, it still has not. Well, I don't need to go on and finish it, but this is obviously not. This is a very, very difficult thing. But I know that the review board was really admonished them. Anything you think is going to change?
Well, first, I think the review board did a fantastic job. I think they were thorough, and it really highlights the value of this and what the administration and Jen Easterly and others have put together. That being said, though, I think it does highlight the inadequacies that we've seen from Microsoft. And to your comment about this public information, and I've talked about this several times with you, just the lack of transparency. In particular, security, you have to be transparent, you have to be clear, and you have to be honest. And when you know there's an inaccuracy and you wait 4 months before you actually correct it, you have to scratch your head and wonder what the reason was.
Well, at the same time, though, can't we just say there by the grace of God? I mean, anybody could go. Microsoft has, it's big, so it obviously has a lot of clients. So maybe it's just a percentage of their clients like anybody else in your business.
You know, from Microsoft's perspective, obviously they're big. And I think that's why we're talking about them, because from a risk perspective, they have so much reach. And, you know, what was really concerning to me is if they're not being transparent and forthright with the public, what are they doing to their customers and are they putting them at risk? And I think that's one of the most damning things that came out of the report is just the cultural change that has to take place at Microsoft at the moment.
Well, I mean, can I just say if I were a competitor with them, I would be saying this is the greatest thing. They are the donor who keeps giving.
Well, sure. Look, in security, obviously it's a competitive space, Jim. And at the end of the day, we don't want to see anyone have an issue, right? We're all out there trying to protect customers. But I think Microsoft needs to be held to a higher standard, given what they do, given their cloud infrastructure, and given the deep penetration they have into the government. One of the last times I was on the show with you, we talked about this. This is going to pose a systemic risk for the government because of the technology and because of the inadequate architecture that they have from an authentication perspective. I talked about this in 2021 with the Senate Intelligence Select Committee, and this is exactly what we're seeing in 2024.
Well, I was surprised. I mean, this is a, you know, these guys are obviously nonpartisan, and they do believe that Microsoft misled them, and transparency does not seem to be right. We did read a statement from Microsoft about this, but I wanted to get this. This is when I looked at the Cyber Safety Review Board, I was shocked, frankly. I was shocked because this is a government agency basically saying this is just the kind of act we just can't have. Now, speaking of acts we can't have, I'm reading in the HIPAA Journal today, HIPAA, which says there's a new ransomware. This is involving the United Healthcare. New ransomware group claims to have data from Change Healthcare ransomware attack. They're putting out releases. The cyber criminals, they put out a release saying that basically they haven't been paid yet. Don't worry.
I think this is part of what we've seen in the past with this data disclosure element. There's two pieces to this. One is if you don't pay the ransom because you can restore from backup, that these adversaries and these cybercrime gangs will actually disclose this data and embarrass the company. The second piece of this is there is a requirement, as we've talked about, that you have to disclose a potential breach within 4 days. And I don't know the situation because we're not involved in it, but at the end of the day, the adversaries are getting smarter and they're going back and they're more persistent. And again, it gets to the point of how important cybersecurity is, and stopping the breaches is top of mind.
Well, George, is this right now? Is this real time? A new ransomware group called Ransom Hub has emerged and issued a ransom demand to Change Healthcare Optum Group. Is this right now?
Well, this is what happens all the time, Jim. Like, you have new groups emerge. You have one group that gets paid off, another group comes online, and that's the thing in this game. Even if someone is actually paid to go away and someone paid a ransom, and again, I don't know the details, but even if they do that, doesn't mean that they're not going to come back, or they go back to an access broker, which means you can buy access to almost any company, and they will then use that to create another ransomware
campaign. But sure, I want them to pay off. I want United Health to pay off. They have my records.
Well, you might want to take that up with them, but you know, obviously it's one of the systemic challenges that we have in cybersecurity is dealing with ransomware. And I think that's in part, you know, a big piece of why we've been successful, to be able to stop these attacks and keep our customers safe. And it's not an easy task. Anyone can have a challenge, but the environment continues to change and it gets worse as AI becomes more prevalent and the bad guys are using it.
Well, is the government doing enough to stop these state-sponsored attacks?
This is a key thing. So if you look at this report, obviously this comes out of the government, and I think they did a good job with it. But they have to hold these adversaries accountable. And given the nature of the internet, it's difficult to go just grab people. It's difficult to bring them to justice. And that's the hard part. When you have determined nation state adversaries that their day job is to figure out how to get into corporations, particularly in the U.S. and around the globe, you have to have the ability to stop them and have some level of deterrent. And that is a harder task than it sounds like.
Well, look, George, I got to tell you, I think that one day we're all going to wake up. They have everything about us. We get a lot of phone calls. I got calls today. People in my office listen about people who knew everything about me, trying to get me to buy some sort of Medicare thing. Total fraud. And people just say, don't worry about it. But there's a lot of people, George, who are getting fooled. I mean, anyone who's on Medicare, maybe, you know, it's not that wise, might just send these guys all the information that they really want. And then you owe them money. I mean, it's crazy.
Jim, here's the hard part now when we think about deep fakes, whether it's audio or video, to actually create a deep fake and execute a social engineering scam is going to be one of the easiest tasks you could possibly find, because it's just a matter of capturing a voice and replaying it back and having an interactive conversation. So it's only going to get worse. And a lot of these attacks are based on social engineering. That's why it's important to have the best protection in place to be able to stop these at the source of the attack.
Absolutely.
The
well, George, thank you so much for cluing us in. At least people can protect themselves better from what you say. That's George Kurtz, co-founder, president, CEO of CrowdStrike. I don't know if you're as disturbed about this stuff as I am, but I find everything here pretty shocking. Thank you, George. Appreciate it. Hit Money's back here for the break.
Coming up, hit us with your best shot. An electrified fast fire lightning round is next.
It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Everybody, that's where Brad Bird is. Just to go to the course, you'll play this out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Skeet Daddy? It's time for the lightning round. Let's start with Eric in New Jersey. Eric.
Yes, sir. Big booyah, Jimbo. This is Eric calling in from Princeton, New Jersey. How's it going?
All right. Good to have you on the show. Let's go to work, Eric. What do you got?
Awesome. So I just want to give you a quick shout-out. Thanks for the work you do. Quick shout-out to my mother, my stepdad, and my coworker, Dennis. He would love the fact that I'm calling in right now.
Dennis, fabulous.
Awesome. So I'm calling about a medical technology company currently paying a 3.3% dividend yield. Shares are pretty much flat here year-to-date. What do you think about Medtronic?
I think that Medtronic is a buy, and that Jeff Martha's being undervalued here. I like what they're doing in AI. You've got a good one with a good yield. Let's go to Brandon in New York, New Jersey. Brandon.
Yeah, I'm actually in New York. I just saw the eclipse, you know?
Oh, yeah. Hey, man, it was pretty wild, wasn't it? Went out with the whole group.
Yeah.
I chose not to look at it.
Yeah.
Who wants to get their eyes burnt, yeah, exactly. It's crazy. Well, what's going on now? Maybe.
I'm trying to remember what I... REPX.
Oh, yeah. Hey, man. REPX. Let me add that. Riley. Riley, that's actually a very cheap stock. It's got a good yield. I don't understand why it's here, and I think you should buy it. Let's go to Sebastian in Florida. Sebastian.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I am good, Sebastian. How about you?
Good. Just recently joined the club a couple months ago.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks for all
thank
the
you,
hard
man.
Work you do
thank
for
you.
Us.
Thank you. Sure try. What's going on?
Been tracking this stock for a couple of months now. Should be doing good given the current environment with data centers and microchips and everything going on with NVIDIA and other companies. The last two quarters were disappointing. However, the stock price keeps bouncing back.
What stock is it?
Wesco, ticker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know the quarter's been disappointing, but you're absolutely right. It's got the wind behind its back, and that's why it keeps coming back. Not unlike Ferguson, which we had on last night. I really like that stock. Let's go to Deep in Florida. Deep.
Hey, Jim. Good evening. Calling from sunny Florida. First of all, great to be on your show, and thanks
great,
for
Deep.
Everything what you do.
Thank you.
I also want to say me and my father, big fan of your show, and my father wants to say we are back to you. We are, Jim.
Hey, how are you? Good to speak to you, partner. What stock you got there? What do you got?
Hey, I want to ask about Cleveland Cliff. Should I buy into Lorenzo?
I like Cliffs, okay, but people think they might pay up and get letter X, and that's the problem. I would buy that stock under 20. That's my level. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, the copper showstopper. Kramer shares a key lesson that could make you money. Next.
Sometimes the analysts just run out of patience and recommend a stock simply because it refuses to come in. They abandon all patience because they're afraid to miss out on something that's probably already happened. And that's how I feel about Bank of America's recommendation today of Freeport McMoRan. Don't get me wrong. I like Freeport. Good copper company. There's a robust market for copper, electric vehicles, data centers, and they're being built like men. But I can't count on its recommending Freeport here because its stock has been straight up like a Musk rocket. A little over a month ago, it was at $37. Now it's at $51. Is that the right time to recommend? That's called a parabolic move, for heaven's sake. When people see these, they become fearful of missing out, and they get drawn in. So they jump, even this analyst. Even though this is copper, not tech. Can he be right? Possibly. Copper's a commodity. It can be squeezed. It can be impacted by surging China property market. Back in 2022, China consumed more than half of the world's copper. Of course, the real estate industry is much worse shape right now. Oh, and let's not forget, the EV market has slowed down pretty dramatically in this country. That's not the point, though. My problem with this recommendation is that the analyst seemed to feel like he couldn't wait any longer for the stock to come down. So he gave up and he pulled the trigger. That's how it seems to me. I can't think of another reason to make a move like this today. Was there an alternative? Yes, with this kind of parabolic move, you either get in early or you don't get in at all. The right answer is to say, hey, we missed it. Time to wait for a pullback to a safer level. I know it's tough to resist when you've done all the research on the company. You come to work every day hoping this will be the day, this will be the day, this will be the day. That stock comes down, you can pounce. Sometimes, though, like Freeport, it doesn't stop. So you grow desperate and finally say, darn it, today's the day. Let's recommend it. Let's go. I learned a long time ago that these parabolic moves don't last. The odds simply do not favor Freeport stock going much higher at this very moment. Sure, this analyst says copper is, quote, at the epicenter of the energy transition, end quote. To me, this almost feels like a call for a copper supercycle. Those calls always end badly. But I don't care how good it is. You just can't come in on top of such a big move. You have to wait. Or as Karen Kramer, who ran our trading desk brilliantly in days of yore, would say to me, if I came to her with this stock right here, you idiot, you own, you, now you come to me, you missed it. And either wait until it comes down or find a better stock, end quote. I checked in with her today about it, and I guess we've all mellowed because she said, looks like you'd be reaching your suboptimal, like, Gandhi. I know my judgment's brutal, but the money management business is brutal. Professional investing is about the odds. What are the odds that this is the level to buy Freeport after just shot up from 37 to 51? I think they're slim, but not none, but slim, suboptimal. Patience or forget about it. That's the ritual. So I wish everyone good luck with Freeport, especially the analysts, but I learned from the master who always called me an idiot when I wanted to buy a stock after parabolic move because, alas, I was an idiot almost every time I overrode her. Better to wait or admit that you missed it and just move on. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.